When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben. Welcome to the podcast, episode 267. It's November 7th, 2016. My guest today is Steve Shortell. He is a professor of organizational behavior at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. He is the director of CHOIR, the Center for Healthcare Organizational and Innovation Research. And today we're talking about lean healthcare and a new initiative of his that's part of CHOIR. It's called CLEAR, the Center for Lean Engagement and Research in Healthcare. So their funding comes from, their initial funding comes from organizations you might know, the Lean Enterprise Institute, the ThetaCare Center for Healthcare Value, and Rona Consulting Group. So in this episode, we'll talk about the center, their planned research, and some of the reasons why there's variation in what organizations would describe as lean, variation in methods and approach, as well as variation in results. So we're going to talk about other related topics, including a little bit about payment reform, accountable care organizations, or ACOs. Professor Shortell was one of the creators of the ACO approach. So he is uniquely positioned, I think, to study this in a very academic way. And I think that's going to be very helpful for the lean healthcare movement. So if you would like to find links to the center, if you're interested in maybe collaborating with Professor Shortell, visit the blog post page for this episode at leanblog.org/267. Steve, hi. Thank you for being a guest on the podcast today.
Good to be here, Mark. Happy to do it.
So, you know, before we talk about the center and the work that you're doing, can you first introduce yourself, your background in healthcare, health policy? Kind of tell the listeners about you and your career.
Sure. My background is in the behavioral sciences. I have a PhD in behavioral sciences from the University of Chicago. Taught there for a couple of years and went out to the University of Washington in Seattle, and then was recruited to the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, where I was for about 16 years, a little bit in the medical school, mostly at Kellogg, and then came to Berkeley in 1998, where I'm the Blue Cross professor, whatever they say, distinguished professor of health policy and management here at UC Berkeley. All my work has been in healthcare, particularly around organizational improvement, quality and outcomes of care. I served the school here for 11 years. I was dean of our School of Public Health here, and now I'm full-time on the faculty, teaching and doing research, and head up the Center for Healthcare Organizational Innovation Research called CHOIR. But our new companion center that we're going to talk about today, Mark, we call the Center for Lean Engagement and Research, or CLEAR. And I'm co-director of that along with my colleague, Tom Rendall.
So can you talk briefly about CHOIR and what some of the focus has been of that center?
Yeah, CHOIR was started about 5 years ago, and we really are focused on practice-based research dealing with innovations in healthcare delivery. We're trying to work to speed up the transformation of the American healthcare system through the research that we're doing in CHOIR. We have 7 or 8 projects. About $7 or $8 million funded by NIH and private foundations largely. Two or three very quick examples. We're part of a national center along with the Dartmouth Institute in the High Value Healthcare Collaborative, which is 17 of the nation's largest health systems. It's a five-year award from the Agency for Health Research and Quality to look at healthcare transformation issues and patient engagement and care management and also biomedical innovations and the impact of payment as we move towards a more value-based payment system. So that's one of our big initiatives. We also have a large PCORI grant, Patient-Centered Outcome Research Institute grant, to study patient activation and engagement in two large ACOs. We're working with DaVita Healthcare Partners, headquartered in Los Angeles, and then the Advocate Medical Group and Health System, headquartered in Chicago. And then just to give a flavor maybe for a third project that we work on, we're doing a evaluation of the State Innovation Model Awards, or the SIM grants, to states, and particularly looking at the impact of those grants on improving care for people with diabetes. So we have four or five other projects like that under the umbrella of CHOIR. That's our major center here that's been in existence about five years. We have about 11, 12 staff, several faculty working with us. And then the opportunity came up when he asked to develop this companion center that we call CLEAR. But that's a little bit of background about CHOIR.
Okay. Well, thanks. And before we talk more about CLEAR and Lean, you mentioned ACOs, and I'm curious. Some of the listeners might not know that term. I did a podcast with Dean Gruner a little over 4 years ago. He was the CEO at ThetaCare, of course, and this is where I think maybe we start seeing overlap. We did a podcast about ACOs, but I'm curious, how would you define ACOs and summarize some of the goals and what's been the aim of ACOs? What have we accomplished through ACOs?
Right. Happy to talk about ACOs, or Accountable Care Organizations. I was one of several people that actually had some input into developing that part of the Affordable Care Act, along with Elliot Fisher at Dartmouth and a few others. So we're very familiar with the concept. But basically, it is that physician practices primarily, they may be aligned with hospitals, have incentives to hit certain cost and quality metrics for a defined population of patients. And they can share in the savings from that, and in some cases they're also responsible for losses, depending on the Medicare program. The Pioneer program, they're responsible for losses as well as any savings for staying under a predetermined expenditure cap. But they have to meet, first of all, 33 quality metrics. Or in the shared savings program, they can share in savings. They're not yet responsible for losses. Now, that's Medicare. It should be pointed out that on the private sector side, there are also these risk-based contracts. And in the United States right now, there's over 800 accountable care organizations around the country. So we've been doing a lot of work with these ACOs. With our colleagues at Dartmouth, we fielded three waves of a national survey of ACOs and have a number of articles published about them. And then also we'll be going in the field probably with the fourth survey as well. We've also developed a taxonomy of these ACOs and have done some work on the extent to which physicians are participating in them. National evaluations of these are very mixed in terms of, so far, their ability to contain costs. They have been improving quality, but the evidence on containing costs is decidedly mixed. On average, the Medicare ACOs may be 1.2% savings on average in very recent evaluations. A number of the Pioneer ACOs had a lead, though, and have gone to other savings models because they really weren't doing so well under some of the parameters of the original legislation. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of glass half full, half empty, which way is it going to rise, and we will see. But it's interesting to observe historically. There's been a greater and faster growth of accountable care organizations over the past 3 to 4 years than there were back in the 1970s and 80s with HMOs. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting comparison. HMOs did grow with the legislation, Nixon administration, 1976, but these ACOs have grown even further. Yeah. So it's very much a work in progress.
Yeah, and I believe, you know, ThetaCare had been at one point the most successful of the Pioneer ACOs in terms of their performance.
Correct.
And was that how maybe the transition, talking more about Lean and ThetaCare and John Toussaint, was that how you got introduced to Lean? Or I'm curious if you could tell some of the story about how you came to learn about that and research that. And, you know, there's similar goals of simultaneously improving quality and cost. I was curious if you can tell some of that story, maybe leading up to the founding of Clear.
Yeah, so the crosswalk, if you will, or the relationship between kind of research we've been doing at Quire and the development of Clear is the fact that as payment changes towards more value-based, it puts pressures on hospitals and healthcare practices to change fundamentally the way care is delivered and to look for a new way of managing and leading our organizations that use the scientific method to empower frontline workers where the real waste is, to be able to get this done in a way that improves quality and patient responsiveness to patients, and at the same time, underneath some of these expenditure targets. So my particular connecting of the dots is when I was asked to join the advisory board of the ThetaCare Center for Value Creation, or the ThetaCare Center for Value, 3 years ago. And that's where I knew about that ThetaCare was an ACO. I had prior knowledge of that ThetaCare Bellin. But I saw firsthand what Lean was doing for them and for others to be able to meet those goals. So that originally, the ThetaCare Center for Value tried to start this research center at another university, and it did not get off the ground because of some personnel changes there. So they then turned to us here at Berkeley, knowing about Quire, the fact that Lean would be a very nice complement to Quire, whether or not we would start the center here at Berkeley, which we have now done.
And, you know, before talking about the research that's taking place or is going to take place with Lean, I mean, I'm curious if you have any thoughts to share about other quality improvement methodologies that have been tried over the past 20 years in healthcare, whether that might be total quality management or Six Sigma, or even, you know, I know a lot of people in the healthcare improvement movement were influenced by W. Edwards Deming and his approach to quality. I'm curious if you have any thoughts, kind of reflections around these other methods and why it seems at times quality improvement is such slow going, this need you mentioned to speed up the transformation of healthcare. What reflections do you have maybe on, you know, ongoing previous attempts to improve healthcare quality?
Yeah, Mark, I think that the key difference is the need for an overall comprehensive, everyday, concerted approach to improving quality and to getting greater value. And the challenge that has been faced by individual methods or tools, whether or not they be Six Sigma or PDSA cycles or quality circles or what was called total quality management. And some of that has worked, by the way, and has been institutionalized. Some of it has not. Is the fact that it was often disconnected from an overall culture change in the organization and among the leadership of the organization. Mm-hmm. The techniques and tools have always been there. And so, in my view, Lean, although it's commonly thought of as Toyota Production System and the use of, you know, value process mapping and all the other tools available, including PDSA cycles, by the way,
right,
that's not really what differentiates Lean.
Mm-hmm.
What Lean is all about is a new way, fundamentally, of managing and leading an organization from the CEO and the board on down, that emphasizes the scientific method as fast as possible and solving problems on the front line and empowering the front line to do that and removing barriers and being a part of the whole system that does that, as opposed to, oh, yeah, let's try Lean in the ED. That's fine if you want to do that, and, you know, you're going to do some tools and that'll improve throughput, et cetera. No, that's a one-off. We have a lot of examples of one-offs. But lean is a much more comprehensive approach. And I don't really care too much whether or not you call it lean. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people do.
Right.
It can be called overall transformation improvement, you know, mindset, philosophy, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to call it lean, fine, we can call it something else. But it's more than just using the tools.
Yeah, I agree. And I use the word lean a lot, but I often find myself saying to people, I don't care if you call it lean. The point is not to quote unquote get lean. The point is to improve and you know, I think, like you said, to accelerate the transformation, not just dabbling around the edges with a few tools, but that transformation means, like you said, changing the way leaders manage and lead. And so I think that brings up one of the challenges, and maybe this is one of the things you'll be researching. I'm curious, you know, what you hope to learn through the research that the Center CLEAR will be doing. You know, I see a lot of variation out there where what you described, you can't see me, but I'm nodding my head and agreeing with you in what you said. But it seems like not every organization or CEO out there in the realm of healthcare agrees or understands, which is frustrating. It slows the transformation of the health system. But what are your thoughts on that variation and other things that you plan on researching?
Right. So the aim of our center is to help organizations reduce the variation in how they're providing care. And the key is actionable knowledge. The missing link or the gap that we intend to fill with our center and its associated research is to provide more of an evidence base of actionable knowledge that leaders and everyone can use to speed up the transformation. And we have a working definition of lean, Mark, and like I said earlier, you don't have to use the word lean, but basically it's the development of a culture that enables an overall management system to create value for customers or patients in this mm-hmm. case by eliminating waste and solves problems through the daily application of the scientific method in creating standard work. That's kind of the working definition we're using to guide our center's work. And what we plan to do, therefore, is to give you a sense of two or three initial major initiatives. And the first one is going to be to field a national survey of the nation's hospitals that in some way are on this overall improvement journey, whether you call it lean or something else. And we're working on that now. It will be fielded after the first of the year with the support, or it's going to be fielded by the American Hospital Association, so we'll have that support and hopefully a high response rate as a result. And we'll be linking that to performance data. Confidentially, we won't identify hospitals by name.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be analyzing that and getting some reports out to the field. So it'll be the first, really, that we're aware of to describe the landscape of what's going on out there and whether or not there's any association with some of these performance metrics. So that'll be one of our first major initiatives. A second thing that our advisory council, we have a strategic advisory council that's advising us as we launch this center, resonates with is trying to see if we can identify 8 to 10 hospitals or health systems out there that would want to work in an action learning collaborative, overall performance improvement collaborative, for 5 years, which is a long time commitment. To leverage each other's resources and learning, but interacting now with a research center like ours. So we call this action research. We'll feed stuff back. We'll analyze things. We'll facilitate meetings, et cetera, et cetera. And they like this idea because it enables us to do something that's very important, and that is to look at changes over time in the advancement of this improvement journey, lean journey, call it what you want,
mm-hmm.
and to associate that with changes over time in performance. So we can draw stronger causal inferences. We won't necessarily have a randomized trial, but we'll have over time longitudinal data, which will make the analysis more sensitive to what it is these organizations are doing. So I don't know whether we'll be successful in that or not, but that's one idea we're going to be pursuing. The third part of our center will be anyone that wants to approach us to do some research projects with them or others will certainly be open to as well. And we don't pretend to have all the expertise here at Berkeley, but we're going to be able to broker it with about 16 other universities that will have a network to line up with the best people to examine that particular topic. And in that case, our center will act more as a broker or a facilitator, as it were. And the fourth thing is on our website, which I can provide to you and listeners, there'll be information there. We have an annotated bibliography going back to the year 2000, so the last 16 years on research on lean, and we'll be updating that quarterly so people can very easily access what's known to date, what's not known, and that kind of information. And so we'll eventually put tools and presentations on there, and people can go to that website for information as well. So those are some of our initial thoughts, but the void that we are meeting is the fact that the existing research base about lean is pretty meager. Mm-hmm. And there's not a whole lot of evidence that it makes a lot of difference, despite a lot of idiosyncratic, you know, one-off reports. It's working here, it worked in the ED. Mm-hmm. But when you look more systematically, the support isn't overwhelming. Certainly not as much as it has been in manufacturing, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's interesting, you know, because I started my career in manufacturing and have spent kind of almost equal 10 years in each. And, you know, in healthcare, I'm still getting accustomed to a lot of people asking about, well, you know, show me the research, show me the journal articles. I'm like, well, I mean, I know there are things that have worked in different organizations, and we think we understand some of the reasons why they worked. In manufacturing, people really never asked for research. It was more applied. You know, you had publishing, you had books and articles. Maybe, I don't know if this was a fault or if it's just different, that a lot of that work didn't necessarily have academic rigor. But it sounds like that's what you're trying to do here for healthcare, people who are looking for that sort of academic basis for all of this, right?
Yes, I think you make a key point, and the difference in my own mind, I'm sure I'm probably oversimplifying a bit, has to do with the highly technical and professional nature of healthcare delivery, particularly with physicians, that you don't have in the same way. Of course, you have very sophisticated mm-hmm. engineers and all kinds of people working in industry. But basically, when you have that, and to some extent, healthcare being largely a not-for-profit field, not exclusively, mm-hmm. those are two key differences. So in manufacturing, my God, you know, if something seems to work in Japan or here, I'm going to try it. And if it gets the results, I don't care if there are any referee journal articles saying it works. It works for me, and I'm going to mm-hmm. drive it home, right? Whereas in healthcare, you know, these physicians are trained, you know, about the randomized trial. They read the New England Journal. They read JAMA, et cetera, et cetera. And so they're naturally saying, well, what's the evidence this is going to work? And there's the bifurcation between the clinical element, the doctors, and often the administrators, right? Mm-hmm. You have the voluntary medical staff. That's changing as more doctors are employed by the organization. So I think in a way it's a different standard of evidence and persuasion mm-hmm. that's needed healthcare than in other sectors, and that's what we're going to try to provide.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, for better or for worse, it's necessary. It'll be helpful to have that. I mean, you know, you mentioned JAMA. There was an article published earlier this year that seemed more opinion than science. You know, a couple of doctors from the Boston area really bad mouthing lean and saying, you know, this doesn't work. This isn't appropriate, and the stories, you know, they told, you know, it didn't sound like lean to me, which maybe points to this variation. You know, people can do all sorts of things and label it lean, which probably then does that make it difficult to do comparative studies, or does that highlight the need for well-structured, rigorous studies?
Yeah, it's the latter. It can make it more challenging and difficult for sure. But the need for more well done studies, and that's what we're going to try to do with the collaborative working, you know, with 10, 11 organizations that want to engage with us in that. And it's also the reason we're trying to launch this national survey. And then if we can do that over time, we'll be able to look at over time differences and produce then more persuasive evidence that maybe not so much it works all the time, but under what conditions and circumstances, or when it's more fully implemented and you have measures of that versus less implemented, that's when you get the impact. I mean, at ThetaCare, as you probably know, it took them 10, 11 years before they began to see some traction and results. And so it doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. The other challenge we have in healthcare is the CEOs turn over an average every 3 years. So, you know, you may have somebody in there that's really putting their shoulder to the wheel, he or she leaves, and yet it hasn't been institutionalized, right? It hasn't gotten where the board says that the successor now is going to be a person who really believes in this different way of leading an organization. That's beginning to happen, by the way, but up to now it has not. So, yeah, I think that's exactly what we're going to try to do. And we've made it clear to our advisors that we're independent. We're going to, you know, call it as we see it. We're not advocates for lean or any of this. Personally, we may believe in it ourselves, right? But as researchers, we're going to design the best studies we can and analyze the data as objectively as we can, because a lot of the learning is actually going to come in what doesn't work as well as what does work.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that doesn't work is, you know, sort of clumsy top-down initiatives where they're not, as you said earlier, empowering frontline staff, including physicians, to be scientific problem solvers. You know, the JAMA article, you know, I understood the complaints of, you know, kind of, you know, inappropriate standardization, being forced to practice medicine a certain way. And, you know, earlier, maybe when we kind of follow up or ask you to elaborate, you talk about reducing variation. You know, I noticed you didn't say eliminating variation. I'm curious, what are some of your thoughts on the controversy or pushback from physicians and clinicians who hear phrases like standard work and reducing variation and get upset about maybe a good thing being taken too far?
Yeah, I think the key is the evidence base. Is the key that will appeal to most physicians. And once you explain to them, you're not talking about eliminating their clinical judgment of what's best for their patient, but rather almost the opposite. You're studying the overall process by which care is being delivered to that patient and figuring out why there is such variation in that process and the outcomes of care, when in fact there may be a protocol, a guideline, whatever, 30 studies in the literature that suggest little need for that. You ought to do X, Y, and Z. Every doctor ought to do X, Y, and Z. Now, whether or not you do A, B, and C may be up to the idiosyncrasies of your patient, your practice, or whatever, and that's fine. But what we're going to do is standardize where we can to free you up to exercise your individual clinical judgment where that is absolutely needed. And I think you have to go through examples of that and explain to them, we're talking about the overall process of care, not just your choice of this drug or this medication, et cetera. But why is it? It ends up too often with the patient you're discharging not following that medication and having it readmitted. Why is that? You know, it's not an error in your clinical judgment. It's an error in the process of discharge, of follow-up, of communication, of not following a standardized protocol, of not delegating to a care man, you know what I'm saying? So you kind of need to take them through that until they kind of get the light, so to speak. Yeah. But it's absolutely understandable on the surface. If somebody will say, oh, that's cookbook medicine, and you can't do in healthcare what you can do in manufacturing, for example. It's just a different industry. But you're right, it's a challenge to explain that difference.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you said is right in line with, you know, I think core lean thinking, that standardized work in the same way doesn't eliminate the need for judgment in certain types of work. You know, not all types of manufacturing are extremely repetitive, and there is room for professional judgment. There's certainly a role for people to play and using their brains and judgment and creativity in improving the way the work is done, like you mentioned, through PDSA cycles, scientific approaches to problem solving. So yeah, I've always thought, you know, it seems like, you know, I hear executives sometimes, hospital executives, sort of bemoaning or if not whining about, you know, the lack of physician engagement. And a lot of times I, you know, sort of try to politely ask, what are you doing to engage the physicians? Yeah. Are you working with them in the name of improvement? Are they partners in your improvement, as I think it should be with Lean, or are you trying to tell them what to do? And, you know, I don't want doctors feeling bullied, and I'm glad that they push back. And I think a lot of times that pushback is proportional to the lack of collaboration, lack of leadership. I don't know if it's a chicken and egg problem, but I mean, we need to work together.
Yeah. And the point that we try to communicate is we're trying to eliminate, or Lean is trying to eliminate, unwarranted complexity, key
right.
term, unwarranted complexity, which is also, by the way, opportunities for greater error. Anytime you can take out a step that not only is streamlining, making something more efficient, you're eliminating a source of error.
Yes. And I think that's another key way, again, how quality and efficiency, hopefully quality and cost, are going hand in hand. So I wanted to ask, you know, I've got the website here. I'll link to it in the blog post about the episode, but it's www.clear.berkeley.edu. You mentioned the annotated bibliography. What of, you know, of the research and findings will be published and shared publicly?
Yeah, so the annotated bibliography is there for everyone, summaries, and we got it broken down by areas, so that's all available to them now. We also put on there some PowerPoints from a presentation I gave at a conference at Stanford about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that's all there public and to be shared, where we make observations and summarize what the literature says to date. In terms of the future research that we plan to do, we will share that. It'll be in the public domain once it's, you know, ready to be aired. We will post it on our website. It'll be probably, well, it will be. I mean, we'll be submitting it for journal publication. We'll also be sending out reports. We might do webinars. We might do more, Mark, podcasts with you, mm-hmm. for example. So all of that, we're not going to keep anything under wraps. Once we've vetted it and analyzed the data, it's going to be made available to the field. We'll present at conferences and meetings and things of that sort as well. And for the 10 or 11 organizations we work with interactively, we'll be doing even more intensive mm-hmm. and you know, customized kind of feedback.
And so you'd mentioned earlier, you know, the action research and looking for organizations to work together. If somebody is a listener who can bring that forward from their organization, if they're an executive or kind of want to get their executives interested in this, possibly being one of those participants, what would you recommend in terms of reaching out to you or the center?
Yeah, absolutely. They can just send me a direct email. Some have already. It's Shortell, my last name. And we're all at berkeley.edu, as you know, mm-hmm. Or they can, you know, send something through the website. I think we have something there where they can sign up or
contact us.
Yeah, contact us, kind of thing. So either way will work. And we've gotten about a dozen inquiries, and we're going to go, you know, slowly. A lot of them don't understand what kind of commitment this might be. They'll have to put up some of their own resources, but they'll leverage everybody else's nickel to create the research support to be able to do the work, collect data, analyze it, feed it back. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to view it as part of the journey they're on.
Yeah.
But they'll say, boy, I'm going to learn so much more by partnering up with, now that there's a Lean Research Center, I can better spend my $50,000 with them than adding another $50,000 to some consultant I'm using, for example. Because this is going to be interactive and with 10 or 11 others.
Yeah.
So that's the decision they're going to have to make. But yeah, just encourage your listeners to contact me directly.
Okay, yeah, and I hope some of them will. Well, maybe also as we wrap up here, if you can talk about some of the partners and sponsors of the center to give them the credit they're due.
Absolutely. So starting off, what creates our core budget to even launch the center at all is support from the Lean Enterprise Institute, LEI, in Boston, support from the Theta Care Center for Value, out of course, Appleton, Wisconsin, John Toussaint, Helen Zach, and all of that group. Support from Rona and Associates. They are a lean consulting firm, as you may know, with about 25 people or so. And John Toussaint uses Rona to some extent and others in order to do the client engagement work. So those are our three core sponsors to get us off the ground. They've each made a commitment for 3 years. We are pursuing others as well. We hope we can get one or two others because we could really use them. Mm-hmm. If you run across anyone, let us know.
Yeah.
They get full credit, of course, they're on our website, and they see it as an investment, obviously, in terms of their companies and what they're trying to do, and probably hope it'll lead to further clients as well as we get some of the stuff out the door. But those are our sponsors currently. We have a strategic advisory council made up of people from those organizations and a couple of others. We also have a research advisory council separate that we're putting together, and that's more from the academic university-based research community.
Well, great. So, yeah, I think everyone listening knows LEI and Theta Care Center. Rona Consulting Group has done a lot of great work. Mike Rona was an executive at Virginia Mason Medical Center. Mike wrote the foreword for the first edition of my book, Lean Hospitals, and John Toussaint. It was no offense meant to Mike, but as John and I started working together, John wrote the forewords for the second and third editions. But it's great that that they are involved, and they each have a lot of experience to share, and I'm glad their organizations are providing that support. So very happy to hear that, Steve.
It's interesting, Mark. It's a small world. Mike Rona was a student of mine, believe it or not, some years ago at University of Washington.
Really? Okay, that is a small world.
Yeah, we were both fairly young then. He was a young pup, and he went off to Mason. And I actually saw him about 2 years ago. He was in the Bay Area here, and we had lunch together. Yeah.
Ah, well, that's good. you're right, small world. So, well, I appreciate you taking some time today, Steve, to talk about the Center for Lean Engagement and Research in Healthcare. Looking forward to seeing how this develops. And maybe at some point down the road, like you said, when there are some new findings or data or research, I would love to do a podcast again with you and have you share some updates with us.
Yeah, happy to do that. Yep.
So, again, our guest today has been Steve Shortell from Cal Berkeley and CLEAR, the Center for Lean Engagement and Research in Healthcare. You can go to www.clear.berkeley.edu to learn more and maybe even get involved. So, Steve, do you have any final thought that you might want to share with the listeners?
No, I would only say that there's this golden opportunity over the next few years, I think, particularly with the upcoming MACRA legislation, which is supposed to roll out by 2019. And as the payment continues to change towards these value-based payment models, it will put additional pressure as well as opportunity for clinical and managerial leaders to really transform healthcare in their markets. And so I just think now's the time to strike.
Well, and like you said, the need is great, the need for improvement, the need for accelerating that improvement. So, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us here today on the podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners. I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.